Week 10, Brent, we're going live. This is new and already a little bit late figuring out technology. I was actually sitting at Baby Girls Flag football game and my wife goes, "Do you see the time?" And I was like, "Oh crap," and ran out of the stadium and ran down the bleachers. And I was like, "Son of a gun, I'm going to be late." But Brent Rollins joins me every week, man, so we can break down the biggest games. Brent, we got 3 versus 4. And obviously playoff jockeying will start this week with that. I think we got some show me games too that I'll talk about later, but good to have my man on as always. And what stands out this week for you?
If you can't get there on time, just get there when you can. That's what stands out for me. The comment from the Mr. String Gene there on the, cause that was you. But Ohio State, Penn State, obviously it's a big game. It's noon, not a night game in Happy Valley. Can Penn State overcome slow starts? Can Ohio State block? There's so much, but all of it to me doesn't really matter except for the James Franklin 1-9 against Ohio State record. That I see all these things and it's hard to get past that initially, at least.
Yeah. And I think when you look at the big games with Penn State, It's been an issue. I think when I look at Ohio State, they've been an issue because they've been really good. Like, that's a good football team every single year. So you kind of understand that. I kind of feel like this is a moment, man. I feel like this is Penn State's best chance. And I feel confident because I feel like their defense, I think they're super athletic. I think they're super disruptive. I think they're one of the fastest defenses in the country. I think Ohio State looks very vulnerable at left tackle. We've talked about that already. Like, they've lost one left tackle. Their backup came in. He got hurt late in the game. They struggled. I would have loved to see, by the way, you said day game. I'd love to see this one at night. I don't understand why it's not a night game. I know some people are fishy about that and stuff, but it just a night game would be amazing. It would be awesome. The whiteout is one of the, Brent, you would love that. It's one of the best environments in all of college football. So cool. And I don't know, man. I'm kind of digging the Penn State underdog this week. Like, I think with their offense, I don't think Drew Aller's going to go. I think it's going to be Bo Pribula. I think Colton Ecky with this offense and the way he does things, I think it maximizes your three best players. I think having your two running backs, Allen and Singleton, who are both big physical beasts, along with Pribula, who can run now, and Ty Warren, who can do a little bit of everything. I feel like Penn State at home with momentum, a lot of people obviously are going to doubt them, but I mean, am I wrong or are you feeling the same? Or are you all over Ohio State?
It's one of those, if you look at the tape and just watch, one, Drew Aller was playing really well against Wisconsin. They had a drop. They had some issues there. And the offensive line issues just keep getting worse. And it's not necessarily always the one. A lot of times you can handle the one injury. It's the second injury, which they have now. And I don't know that – I haven't seen whether that guy's going to be available. But the part about the game stuff, pressure – like, yeah, he didn't even look great when he played. But now it just makes it even worse. The game stuff – and Penn State's ability to get after the quarterback. By the way, you know, we're talking about left tackle issues. Abdul Carter lines up on the right. The defense is right 65% of the time. So that's where he –
dude, that dude's a streak. When you watch 11 – first of all, 11 means something at Penn State. But when you watch Carter come off the edge and you watch him move, sometimes he gives you that freaky vibe, man. Like that – it goes really quick. It's like sped up really quickly. And that's why I think Penn State's got the advantage on defense. Listen, I thought Nebraska handled Ohio State up front pretty well. Now, there's still the dynamic. And here's what this is the interesting part about me with Ohio State. I don't think Chip Kelly's done it yet because I don't think he's had to. But I think when they need to go old school Chip Kelly, run the football with big old Will Howard, to minimize the offensive line issues, still being able to go run left. Now I don't block Abdul Carter. I read him. You know, I think those are the kind of things that I think if Ohio State wins this game, I think Will Howard carries the ball 10 plus times, is really effective in that game. And that opens up the run game because last week they couldn't get anything going up front because they struggled. When they protected Will Howard, it was bombs away, deep ball. And so I'll be interested to see how they use Will Howard. Bo Pabula, I think, is going to be used the same way. But, man, I kind of feel like it's We Are's time. I think Penn State's going to rise up. I think they're going to win the football game. I think they're going to get it done. And Colton Ecky coming in as the OC is the difference for me. I think he can manufacture offense, especially with a really good running quarterback. And I think Penn State finds a way to get her done.
That's funny. If we look at the playoff projections that we have later that I kind of started with, if that happens, it changes those drastically.
So you got Ohio State. I got Penn State.
Yeah, I think so. I think that we'll get to that eventually. But what's funny is you mentioned Howard. So my notes here, I wrote, will Howard run more? Question mark. 26 design rush yards against Iowa was the most that he's had this season. You're looking at approximately like 2 years, 2 years at Kansas State that he had almost 400 total design rushing yards. The other thing was, does Lathan Ransom play? I think that's one that helps their secondary. But we talked about the running game with Ohio State, especially watching them against Nebraska. Does Penn State look at that and be like, okay, I'm just going to go play two deep quarters and dare you to run the football on early downs, and you weren't able to against Nebraska. We think we can shut down your run game, and then on third down, we're going to come after you. And if that's the case, it feels like a first to 20, first team to 20 game to me.
And I think it's a very – this is when you see the investment of Chip Kelly really pay off, because Chip Kelly, his creativity, his brain, the way he inserts – watch him insert receivers into the run game, and he'll find ways to be creative enough to move the football and to have success. He's that good, man. He really is. But I do think it comes down to Will Howard – his ability to run, and I think that will decide. Both quarterbacks are going to be a big part. And Pabula blew me away. He was super efficient throwing the ball last week. When he was asked to do it, he was good. It wasn't deep shots. It was, you know, crossing routes. It was tight ends. It was running backs. But I think they can. I think they can do that again. And Penn State at home in that atmosphere, I like them. I want to go to the cocktail party next. Georgia Florida game. And
I wrote that down correctly then, right? Georgia, Florida?
Yes. Do not mess that up. It's the Georgia-Florida game. And I want to start, Brent, by giving Florida a lot of props, because all the negativity with Billy Napier coming into the season, you heard it. Everybody heard it. For them to get blown out by Miami, and then now to watch them play, they haven't quit. They've continued to fight. And you're starting to see young guys really make plays and have an impact on this squad. And that's, I think, probably the thing I like the best. You, CJ Lagway, dude, or DJ, excuse me, DJ Lagway, you watch him, dude's got a hose. I mean, he can throw it through a car wash and not get the ball wet. Like, he's got that kind of cannon. And he's going to make big plays. He's got an elite arm. He wants to push the ball down the field. By the way, he was the number three recruit in the country last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that he was one of the best quarterbacks in the nation, period, and you see why. And you see he's also a dual threat. He can run it. He's rushed it in every game and made big plays with his feet. This guy in this spot against Georgia, I think, can have some success. But I'm more impressed. I don't think they're going to win the football game, but I'm more impressed that – they've stayed positive. They're starting to build, and you see them. They haven't quit on their coach. I've been impressed by what I've seen with Florida over the last several weeks.
Well, it gets interesting, obviously, for their schedule, because they got Georgia this week, and then at Texas, LSU, Ole Miss. Then the what should be pretty able for them to handle, but at Florida State to finish out. But when you talk about with Lagway, you could tell that, like, obviously when he came in the game against Tennessee, they were – you're fighting to win that game, so you just kind of got to go with it. But against Kentucky, it was, hey, we're going to run the football, and then we're going to take play-action deep shots, and we're going to protect him. You know, I think it was like maybe 14 or 17 attempts, one of those two. But throwing the ball down the field, and he can definitely do that. It's can Georgia's – and I think Georgia will stop their running game and slow their running him down. But the ball kid, the freshman, very impressive. Very a not just home run threat, but I'm always getting six when one is there. I'm getting seven. I'm making this cut, setting up
five TDs.
I can't remember. It was a bunch, but
yeah, they get five.
But his ability to keep, you know, minimize the negative runs and keep them in positive situations, setting up blockers. I think if they are able to stay in the game and keep this a game into the second half, it's because of that. It's because they're keeping the ball, they're hitting a big play or two, and then his ability to run. And because Johnson, you don't know about Johnson's availability. I haven't seen anything, any report or anything related to that yet. But at this point, you got to roll with ball. And like I said, his ability to consistently move the chains, very impressive.
Yeah. And so now I think when you start to spin it, I'm so interested to see him versus or that offense versus Georgia's defense. And what we saw Georgia's defense last was ridiculous. Like it was the best we've seen, you know, this season, this year, putting pressure on the quarterback. Now, I've seen Georgia, they're comfortable going on an island, Brent. They're comfortable and then they're comfortable making you challenge them down the field with those hard shots. Lagway wants to do that. I would force him to be a little bit more patient. Like when you go man to man for a young quarterback, I think it makes the picture pretty clear. And also he turns and runs when there's back to man to man back to the defense, and he can take off and make really, really big plays down the field. So interested to see that. And then spin on the other side for Georgia. The ground game got going against Texas. And if that continues, Brent, you'll see the best version of Carson Beck. That is where he thrives the best. And I say that because Carson's never been the drop back, throw the ball all over the field kind of guy, especially deep shots and have success. But when you make linebackers come up and when he has space to throw over the middle of the field between linebackers and over linebackers between safeties, he's freaking elite. He is one of the best in the business at driving that football. And so I'm interested to see if Georgia continues the ground game. Can ETN keep rolling? And
Ratledge coming back should, or supposedly, yep. We'll see. He was the emergency, I think, center in the last game against Texas. Obviously, 2 weeks later, you would think that he gets back and gets some time, some rotation, the guard rotation. I think he has a Mims type effect, like much like Amarius Mims was for them last year. It makes everything else around them better on their offense. And if that plus the running game, I do think that takes care of business. That Georgia takes care of business in the cocktail party, much like you did. By the way, I was looking at 2004. That was when you guys took care of business in the cocktail party, right?
Yeah, 2003/2004. Yeah, 1 year too late, Brent. 1 year too late. The 12-1 Ron Zook days got us with the 7,000 screen passes, and we dropped a pass late. Oh, jeez. All right. Anyways, thanks for bringing.
Sorry to bring that up.
Yeah, thanks.
But all right. Other big game is, which speaking of this big game, have you looked at the ACC potential tiebreaker situations?
Because oh, Lord have mercy.
It's a bit of a mess. And this game, Pitt at SMU, which is a night game on Saturday night, is going to go a long way in determining whether or not the tiebreaker situation becomes a mess or it doesn't. Because I'm sure there's somebody at the ACC office that's like, hey, Pitt, if you win this game, we don't really have to worry about a lot of those tiebreaker type things. But I don't know. Like, SMU just won a game where they were minus six in the turnovers.
That doesn't happen, by the way.
Five. That's like
that. The chances of that happening is like 0.01%. Like, you're not supposed to win when that happens. And what Brent's talking about is absolutely right. Pitt still plays, you know, Pitt still has games against Clemson, you know. So, first of all, you have Pitt, SMU, Clemson, and Miami, who are all undefeated in the ACC. So, we've got to figure that out. And in order to figure that out, you'd love for them to play each other, but guess who doesn't play each other? Miami doesn't play Clemson. So, and SMU, by the rest of the way, is pretty clear. I mean, because they don't have to play Clemson. And so I think you look at SMU and you say, I feel pretty comfortable if they win this game, they're going to be in the driver's seat. They might win the rest of their games and look really good. Here's the thing I'll say about SMU. RJ Maryland being out last week, I feel like was a lot of the reason why they struggled. That dude's one of the most athletic tight ends in the country. Like, so good. And Jennings really, really struggled. And I think he had – shoot, did he have all six turnovers, by the way? It sure felt like it. He was
– yes.
I mean,
very much so.
And to start the season, remember they had, you know, Stone rotating in with Jennings, and Jennings really got it together, and he can be really, really good. Well, listen, Narduzzi and company are always aggressive. They play that same defense they played at Michigan State. It's really, really aggressive. Corners always disrupt timing on the outside. Like, they make you take shots down the field. And, you know, Jennings, I'll be interested to see how they bounce back if SMU can get the ground game going, keep that going, and Jennings stay in better positions, because he's kind of struggled. But you broke down Pitt's offense last week. What, we still not really a believer in the offense? Because
I'm not as much, especially against who they're playing with SMU. And have you watched Elijah Roberts, who was second in the FBS in pressures last year, is first in the FBS in QB pressures this year, number five for SMU, is an absolute beast on the edge. That plus we've talked about Pitt and their how many interceptions have been dropped. Well, guess who's one of the leading teams in the country in actually getting interceptions and making plays on the ball? That'd be SMU. Yep. So I actually think they do it. But which one thing I was going to see if you saw, there was a great – I doubt you did because you had a busy day. But there was a great article today by Ross Dellinger in Yahoo Sports about Pitt. And I wanted you to read you this quote that is in the article. And it talked about how they basically restructured their NIL in the offseason. Versus kind of everyone getting paid. He's like, if you want sponsorship, there was a quote from a booster that he actually got in there. If you want sponsorships and want to be paid like a professional, you have to earn it. This team is hungry. And Narduzzi said, money doesn't get you a championship. If it did, all these teams that have spent all this freaking money would be really good. Florida State, Michigan spent a lot of money. I want hungry players. I think that was one where you think you just look at it and go, wow, that's a pretty – strong statement from Narduzzi talking about that, but great article by Ross Dellinger at Yahoo Sports. Well, Davey's gone. Let's see if he comes back shortly. Some other things when you look at that, the tiebreaker stuff, if Pitt does go ahead and win the game, they still have Clemson. So there's a potential that the tiebreaker, he's back.
He's back.
Did you hear the quote, by the way, from Narduzzi?
I listened to it. I heard you saying it.
I want hungry players.
Huh?
I want hungry players is what he went with.
And listen, I think a lot of people feel that way. And there's a lot of coaches that want that, but you also realize that you got to have talent and you need elite players. So it's a fine line, but I think you're seeing more and more because of NIL and more individualization. And greed, like you're seeing more people, it matters that you care, and coaches matter that you care. And I think recruiting styles have absolutely shifted in the way they look at recruits and the way they judge things. So I think SMU takes care of Pitt. I think it's a really close, low scoring game because I do believe in Pitt's defense, but I'm not a believer in their QB situation. And their offense as much. So I'll take SMU. You got
I agree
you got
with that. Pitt. No, I agree. I think SMU takes care of business there.
All right.
All right. So we got four other our sort of sneaky good, really good watch games. See if you have an upset in any of these. So we got Ole Miss at Arkansas, Oregon at Michigan, A&M off their big win at South Carolina at night, and then Louisville at Clemson, which to me is one that is – very interesting because Clemson's defense, by the way, has been sneaky, not good, and not being able to get the quarterback, giving up explosive plays like on a per play basis. If you look at their defense, it's been a struggle. And guess what? Louisville can light up the scoreboard.
They can't. I think you said it though. The pass rush is what concerns me. And when you got Tyler Shuck coming to town, by the way, that dude chucks it all over the place. And I can tell you this, if you keep him clean and keep him upright, he'll go through his progressions and pick you apart. And so to me, here's the week. First of all, I don't think it's this one. I think Clemson's going to win. I think it's going to be a high scoring game. But I want to see, this is a big week to show me how much improvement Clemson's made, because since week one at Georgia, they haven't played a great schedule. Okay. There's not anybody that you're pointing to that you're impressed with. And I think this is an opportunity. I think Louisville's really good. I think they've played good football teams, and that's why they have L's. And So I think Clemson has a chance, and mainly on the offensive side of the football. I do think their pass rush is an issue. I think their defense, I have question marks. But I also want to see Cade Klubnik in a big game. Like, yeah. I want to see him. Is this real? His pocket presence is way better right now. His downfield passing is way better. I like what I'm seeing from him, Brent. But here's the thing. When you speed somebody up, life changes. And nobody's been able to speed him up. And Louisville's pass defense has been atrocious. So I'm not sure. Their pass rush is pretty decent. So can they speed him up? But I'm really interested to learn a lot about Clemson this week against a good Louisville team. They've got some losses, but they played some good teams. So I think this is a big week for Clemson to show. They're going to show me how real of a contender they are.
We talked about first to 20 with Penn State and Ohio State. It's first to 40, I think, in this game. A&M at South Carolina. Who starts at QB? Because that has not been discussed. He's not going to say.
Get out of here with who's starting at QB. Like, Reed starting at QB. Everybody saw a 21-0 run in 9 minutes last week against A&M. Everybody saw the offense cook with him in the football game. I think he's going to start. I'm not saying you might not see both at some point if Reed struggles, but Reed's got to be the guy. You can't energize your fan base, your team, and go on that kind of run and win a big game without him throwing in the mix. So he's next. But, man, this is a fascinating matchup because I feel like there's a lot of similarities between these two teams. Like, yeah. South Carolina's defense is legit, legit. And here's the most important aspect to me, and I'm going to let you go. Like, they've got elite edge players. But again, when I have a running quarterback and I can stick that in there and I can read him as opposed to have to block him and I let him fly upfield, like, how do they take advantage of the elite dynamic duo out wide? Like, I'm not blocking those guys consistently. Because if I've seen one thing about South Carolina's defense, you can't pass on them because not only because their pass rush is great, their secondary is really good too. Like, they're really, really good. So you have to be able to run the football. Reed gives them the best chance to run the football, bar none. So that's why Reed is going to be in there to try to take advantage of the spot where South Carolina, to me, is the weakest.
By the way, A&M, only a 2.5. I think it was 2.5 was the number that I saw. Yeah, 2.5-point favorite on the road because that's a night game at South Carolina. That's going to be an atmosphere. All right, so the two other ones, does Michigan get to 20 points against Oregon? And then also, does Trey Harris play for Ole Miss? Because I think if he does not play, they're a completely different football team.
They are.
And that's a very – that's a coin flip game to me if there's no Trey Harris for Ole Miss.
Completely different team, but I'll say this, Brent, really confidently about Ole Miss. Their defensive line, every single one of them, Brent, will get drafted. Every single one that they are – I don't think people understand. Like, Ole Miss's defense used to be the part that killed them, and their offense is the one that hasn't carried the weight this middle part of the season, really. Beginning of the season, they weren't playing much, and they were just running up numbers. But recently, their offense definitely hasn't been the same. Every single one of that front for Ole Miss is going to the NFL. Like, they're that good up front, and they make life hard. So you've got to have you better have some playmakers. You better have a quarterback that can get the ball out, that can attack the secondary of that team, because I think it would be really hard to run at them and consistently block them. I think they're that kind of good.
All right, so last three. Do any of these unbeatens fall this weekend? So Duke at Miami, Texas Tech at Iowa State, Indiana at Michigan State. You got any of those three unbeatens falling or no? You think they take care of business and move on to the next one?
One of those three are going down for sure. Now, I don't know which one. It's that time of year, man. Like, it's just
– it is November. Time of year. Or it will be November.
Yeah, when weird stuff start happening. And I think – if you're asking me, one of them, at least one is going down. I just don't know which one is going down.
Okay. All right. Well, last but not least, it's kind of time to look at what it is that playoff might be, because we're, you know, the first weekend of November games this weekend. It's the stretch run, you could say, for college football. So we put together a little graphic here, or bracket. And
yeah, we did.
I maybe put this together, and then it's one of those things where if it's right, then this was 100% my bracket. If it's wrong, your name's on it, so it's your bracket. That makes it very easy.
Yeah, this is cool. This is that time of year. The rankings come out next week, I think they start. And
all right, so Oregon at one, taking care of business the rest of the way in terms of the Big Ten. Georgia winning out in the SEC and winning the SEC. Miami winning out and getting the ACC bid. And then Kansas State, to me, wins out, beats Iowa State, then beats BYU in the Big 12 championship. So those are the top four. Are you rolling with that, or are you no bueno
somewhere? I think I'm okay. I think it's interesting because Oregon obviously will play Ohio State again, possibly, or Penn State, possibly. Yep. So those three.
According to what you said earlier, it would be Penn State.
Correct. I think
Penn State's their schedule was. Yeah.
So I think Penn State will be that team. So it's interesting to see when those play, what the seedings could look like. But Ohio State can still make it. So I mean, I'm fine. I'm fine with that. I see you kept BYU in, even if they lose to the championship game. That's interesting.
A 12-1 BYU to me. I don't see how they leave them out, especially when you look. They have that one extra data point. You know, you always heard that in the past. They have the 12th win versus, say, a Penn State or an Indiana or even a Notre Dame. Notre Dame has sort of the better wins, I think. So that's why I put Notre Dame at seven. But
seven.
Ohio State at this point would be 11-2, I think. So the one for me is if Indiana's 11-1, I don't see how they're not, and their only loss is to Ohio State if they somehow lose in another one. So this, this is one where it's what it looks like now, and the ACC. Like, I think Clemson's gonna. I think their defense is gonna have them trip up, or they might just be 11-2. And have no actual good, only have one ranked win, and that might not be enough.
And the cool part that we get to do is we're gonna be able to diagnose, like, okay, BYU has one loss. Okay, I think the big thing what I've seen when you get down the stretch is who is the loss to, how bad was the loss, and a lot of times the bad loss to the random team is the one that really is the albatross. Like when you lose to a good team. The committees haven't really dropped you like a hammer, but when you lose to bad teams, man, it's it can be costly. So those are the ones that down the stretch will be interesting to see.
And one thing you notice here, obviously, is that there's four Big Ten teams and three SEC teams. Like, to me, Tennessee with the win at Bama. The other thing I think that is very much in play, because if you look at strength of record and strength of schedule and all those kind of metrics, is I don't know that Boise's just if they're just a guaranteed 12, I think they're going to be higher. 11, maybe even 10, because
which is cool that they can.
And their only loss is a 3-point road loss to Oregon. So
with two big special teams plays.
Yep.
So like for Oregon, they got them there. This will be fun. And
again, if it's right, it's mine. If it's wrong, it's yours.
I'm good with that. I'm good with that.
All right. Well, let's talk about the banquet of blessings, and then we'll see you later.
See you, Brent. Appreciate it like always. Appreciate it like always. And then next will be a guest, a friend. We do this from time to time, but my boy Reese Davis joining the show, I think. There he is. Yes, sir. By the way, I can see the jerseys behind you, and it's not anybody else's fault. It's mine because I have not given you one. So
I know.
I would have started with that and being like, you humpy, you don't have a jersey behind me of me. But
how many times have I asked, David? How many times have I asked?
You bet. You know what? Now I'll make sure I get it done now. How about that? Okay.
All right.
We'll get it done. And speaking of to start, I want to thank you. First of all, Banquet of Blessings. You know, last year was the first year we did it. It was so cool. Rented out the Classic Center in Athens. We bust in a bunch of folks in the surrounding area in need. We gave them clothes. We gave them food. And Reese was a huge part of that, making it happen and supporting that again. So thank you, my brother. We appreciate you.
Oh, man. I mean, my wife Lee and I were just so blown away by what you and Lindsay and your entire family were doing for people in that community and your love for people. And we're happy to be a small part of it, man. You are an inspiration. When you called me up last year to tell me about that, and basically it was sparked by reading one verse and trying to be obedient, I mean, that's really impressive, and we're 100% behind that. And I think it's going to be even bigger and better this year, and I can't wait to see the videos and hear about it.
We'll definitely share them with you. So we ain't got to do this in a while, Reese. So we can go wherever the flip you want to go.
This is like role reversal, Pollock. You're hosting.
So a little inside with Reese, by the way. There's nothing that bothered Reese more back in the day than when a producer said, "Hey, put it on a tee for the analyst." Like that, Reese would be like, "Oh, just put it on a tee. Yeah, just do that." By the way, after doing this some now, it really stinks and it's hard. It's way harder than I ever thought it was. But Reese, I'll put it on a tee for you tonight, okay? Like,
no, I'm just gonna. You're participating in the conversation, David, because that's why I always told him, if you just want somebody to put it on a tee, I've got stuff I can do. I mean, you get a trained seal to go put it on a tee, you know, but I'm never going to argue with you about moves or, you know, pass rush techniques or any of that kind of stuff. You gotta know where your limitations are, but be part of the conversation, you know?
All right. Ohio State versus Penn State. What's the Reese Davis outline looking like? What are you looking for?
You know, I think the biggest thing is, David, is we ran across, Marissa Dowling shared with me a stat that was dug up by one of our data experts at True Media, Jason Starrett, who you probably know used to work with us, with Josh Simmons on and off the field. The stats are shocking. Ohio State can't run the football when he's out for the season. As you know, I'm going to cheat a little bit and look at the numbers so I get them exactly right here in this file that, you know, that I keep every week for the games.
Robust okay. file. Yeah. It's got everything you could ever imagine about Ohio State, like the last 17 coaches, everything known to man right there in that file.
But listen, since Simmons got hurt in the Oregon game, and the difference in the number of plays is negligible. I think it's a difference of 19 snaps. But when he was on the field, Ohio State ran for nearly 6 yards a carry, almost 4 yards before contact, and like 17% of their rushes went for 10 or more yards. When he hasn't been on the field, which is about 60 snaps, I think, yards per carry is down to 2.2. It's half a yard before contact, and 37% of their rushes have been stopped for zero or negative yardage. And they haven't run for a touchdown without him on the field 5 times they did with him on the field. So I think one of the biggest things is, can Ohio State run the football? Because I think they have to balance it out a little bit to be able to do one of the most dynamic things in college football, which is throw it to four, throw it to Jeremiah Smith, get him the ball. But you're going to have to be able to run it some. And both these teams are really good on defense. And, you know, I think that's the XO thing that I'm looking at first. I think Drew Aller's going to be healthy. Thamel's been all over that story for us. It looks as if he'll be, you know, they're not going to be running him. I wouldn't think, but you know, based on some practice video today, one would think he's going to, at the very least, give it a go and probably play. But then there's the bigger picture.
I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Fair to say this. We know the history of Penn State.
Right.
We know the history of Penn State, Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And is it fair to say in this game, and this is what I've seen so far, and this is what I saw last week, is it fair to say that Penn State's offense might be more dangerous with Prabula at quarterback?
He threw the ball well. He's a really good athlete, as you know. I think Aller has really improved, and you know, he's made more big plays through half of the season than he did all of last year in terms of, you know, pushing the ball down the field. But I know how much you love a quarterback who can run, and I think he's a guy who gives them that dimension. And you know from watching Andy Kotelnicki at Kansas, when Jalen Daniels was healthy last year, he had like a whole package of plays where he used Daniels and Jason Bean, who ended up playing most of the year last year, and he did that a couple years ago too. So I'm not going to be surprised to see a whole lot of Bo Prabula, and sometimes maybe on the field together, and not just using, you know, not just doing the thing where you would do in a wildcat where you put Aller outside the hashes and, you know, just force him to occupy somebody. They end up using both of the guys. So I don't know that I would say it's totally more dangerous, because I think Aller this year has proven you know, more proven passer, but certainly Perbula is a guy who played well the other night when he had to come in throwing the ball, and certainly is probably a more dangerous, or definitely more dangerous runner than Drew Aller is.
He's definitely a more dangerous runner. And I think the thing that makes me say that, Reese, is because I think the best players on Penn State's offense are two running backs and a tight end. Mm-hmm. And I think Perbula can use those guys just as effectively as Aller. Like Aller, yes, yeah. His patience is better. His pocket mm-hmm. awareness is better. Like he's more decisive when he takes off and runs. I love all that about him. I don't see the Penn State wide receivers of old that we used to see that could smash people out wide. And so if I'm going to use my best players on the field, and I think Colton Ecky's brilliant at this, and he showed you this at Kansas with Daniels, I think it is the two running backs. I think it's three running backs with Perbula. And then mm-hmm. I think Tyler was an absolute Freaky Friday tight end. I really feel like, man, you can stress a defense sideline to sideline and make it cover every blade of grass with him at quarterback. And I think it utilizes their weapons the best.
You know, it's going to be all of the things that he does, especially with Tyler Warren, but not exclusively. I mean, things like, you know, putting guys in formations so he sends offensive linemen in motion to, you know, to get blocks both on a run and a pass. I mean, there are a lot of different things. And then if you follow the philosophy of getting your best players the ball, and I think you're right. I mean, look at the number of times that they got Tyler Warren the ball against USC. I mean, 17 catches or whatever it was. And, you know, and then they can really, you know, they can really run it. Both those running backs are good. And, you know, I think this is their chance. And yet I still think, David, that Ohio State is one of the two or three most talented rosters. And even with the injury up front, it's just, I think I'm going to need to see it from Penn State to actually believe that they're going to beat a roster like that on a stage like this. And so I just need to see it. Yeah. I think Penn State's really good. They're a playoff team. They're going to go regardless of whether they win on Saturday, in my judgment. But I think we'll find out if they are truly a threat to win the whole thing by how they play on Saturday.
Which I think if you've watched Penn State over the years, there's a reason you feel that way, Reese. Like they've done it time and time again where you said they have a roster to compete with Ohio State, but they don't. All right. Next game that I think, speaking of teams that have something to show me, this isn't the biggest game, but I haven't seen Clemson play anyone since Georgia. And I'm buying Cade Klubnik's progress. I see it on tape. I see the pocket presence is a million times better than it used to be. I'm seeing shots down the field. I'm seeing this offense look better. Is this the week that we find out that Clemson is ready and that team that is ready to compete for an ACC championship and a playoff-worthy team?
See, I agree with you. I mean, Clemson's ACC opponents, I think, are 7-18 or something like that in conference play. They haven't played anybody. But I like the way they look. And it's as if they've, you know, I don't really know exactly whether, you know, Dabo was, you know, encouraging Garrett Riley to play it closer to the vest or not do this or not do that. You know, in the Georgia game, or maybe Georgia just, you know, does what it can do in big games like that. But they seem to have cut it loose a little bit more. Klubnik seems a lot more comfortable. And, you know, I'm not sure that Louisville is the ultimate test, but it's certainly a bigger one than they've been having. So I'm with you. I'm buying Clemson. I think there's no rule against getting better just because they look totally outclassed in the Georgia game doesn't mean they have to stay that way. So I think Clemson's the best team in the ACC. And now Cam Ward is the guy at Miami that can make a difference in a game and might steal the game by himself. But the best team, the best roster, I think overall, I still think is Clemson.
Yeah. And then the problem with Clemson is, man, I do not see the defense we've seen in the past. Like the pass rush is a real problem. Like there's just so many guys that I can name out between Farrell and Christian and Big Dext and Brian Brussey. And we could go down the list, and I don't see the guy. I don't see the multiple guys that can get after the quarterback. And that's why I think we're going to find out against a really good passing attack with Louisville this week. Another great game, man. I think this has a chance to be an upset when you got A&M going to South Carolina. We've been there a bunch. That stadium is so freaking awesome. The fans are fantastic. Like, they're always ready to roll. That pass rush doesn't have to get ready because they stay ready, Reese. Every single week, they are ready to rush the quarterback and wreak havoc.
They're really close to having a much better record than they have. And the only thing that scares me about this one, David, is it seems like everybody's feeling the way you and I apparently do on this. I pick South Carolina to win the game. I think they're going to win the game.
Hey, baby.
I mean, they've got they've got problems protecting the quarterback, and I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. And even little things like they don't kick field goals as well as they have in the past. And you're probably going to need to make some field goals in this game. I'm really impressed with what Elko's done at A&M. But in this particular year, with the exception of, you know, the ultra elite teams, Oregon, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio State, everybody else has had a game like this where they've lost. I mean, you could say, well, Georgia lost to Alabama. Maybe Alabama's not what they've been, but that's still that's not like Notre Dame losing to Northern Illinois or Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. No, Vanderbilt's improved, but or that week at Tennessee losing to Arkansas and all of that week where we had five of the top 11 lose to unranked opponents. Everybody else has lost a game exactly like the one that Texas A&M is going to play in Columbia Saturday night. And, you know, I think A&M is good. I think they've improved. But with those guys on the edge, you really think they're just going to let Marcel Reed run wild if he's the guy? And you really think Wigman has shown you enough that he's going to stand in there and get much done from a passing standpoint if they go to him? I just think those two guys
can. First of all, is there a QB decision to be made?
Oddly, I think there is. I know what happened Saturday night, and he's pushed the right buttons both times, because as you probably heard, when he came in the first time, when Connor Wigman was hurt, most of us, me too, kind of thought that and said, okay, well, Marcel Reed's going to be the guy. And Elko was he was hesitant on it. And he said, you know what? He hasn't played as well as you guys think he's played. You know, the last couple of weeks, he's still making youthful mistakes. And there are things that Wigman does for us. It helps our offense. And he put him back in there and it looked like the right thing. And then, boy, he did not have his best night by any stretch of the imagination against LSU. And Elko, you know, rolls the dice and it, you know, he hits it again. So I think this is going to be a thing that goes back and forth by situation throughout the course of the season. I fully anticipate Reed starting, because if he doesn't start, you risk losing the team. But yeah, it's not going to surprise me to see him struggle and at some point A&M say, okay, we're going to need to see if we can get more of the passing game going, so we're going to try Wigman. Not going to surprise. And I think if it doesn't happen Saturday, it'll happen at some point later on during the season.
Yeah, I think I could definitely see that. I don't know how when you're down 17-7 and a dude comes in on a 21-0 run in 9 minutes that you go.
Oh, he's got to start, I think. Don't you?
We're going to go to the other guy. I don't see that. I think that's the easy starting point. And with those great pass rushers, man, like, how do you slow them down? Having a great quarterback that can run, evade, I think that'll be a big play.
He only threw two balls, you know, against LSU. Yeah, I know, because they kept crashing down, and they kept crashing down, so I just ran. And he did that
smart offense. But I did think when LSU came back and scored and cut the deficit, then it's first and 10, and they had enough faith in him to throw a bomb down the field, and he delivered. So that was a good sign too. But I think you can also, I also didn't think LSU was ready for him. All right, last one. I'll put this one on the tee for you. Georgia, Florida. What do you think about this game? What do you thought about Georgia so far this season too? Kind of definitely not the dominance we've seen in the past from Georgia, but obviously still very good.
Well, I've been calling this game the world's largest outdoor mocktail party, because Florida's going to have to play better before they merit, you know, somebody raising a glass to them. Although some Florida fans probably have been drinking things much harder than mocktails to try to get through this. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Florida jumps on them, you know, score 7 or 10 points and then, you know, loses by 20. Georgia's one of the elite teams in the country. I think they battled a little complacency early. I would imagine that there's some heat that on Carson Beck internally. You know, is he going to be QB1 in the draft? He's going to put up the numbers. You know, I think he's already turned it over more times this year than he did all of last year. And I still, I mean, right now, if you had to, if you asked me to pick who's going to win the national championship, I'm taking Georgia. Because they may not be exactly what they've been the last few years, but when, you know, when Kirby made up all that stuff and got people agitated, nobody, you know, nobody respects us, blah, 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 blah. I must have missed all the thank you notes for the nice stuff we said the last 3 years, Kirby. But it, you know, at any rate, it got them wound up, and Mykael Williams and Jaylen Walker. I mean, they just, I mean, they cost poor old Kelvin Banks so much money in Austin that night. And they were talking first tackle off the board. And then after the game, they're saying, that guy might have to be a guard. I don't know. You know, I mean, it was, I mean, he's going to have to atone at some point and get that money put back in his pocket. But Georgia can do that to you. I still think their offense hasn't totally clicked the way it's capable, and it might not, because I don't see, you know, I'm not trying to cast aspersions. I don't see dominant receivers. The guys can take the top off might not be the most sure-handed guys in the world, and the most sure-handed guys aren't quite as explosive. So that probably adds a little bit of problem to it, and you lose a guy like Bowers, and it turns out, I guess, Ladd McConkey's good at football. Not that those of us, you know, everybody knew, but now the NFL knows too. And, you know, so you're replacing some dudes. And, you know, I still think they're, you know, look, can Ohio State, you know, Texas, if they play again, you know, Oregon beat Georgia? Yeah, sure they can. But I still think Georgia is probably the team that I would be very reluctant to bet against.
Yeah, it's fun to, it was so good to hear you do that voice again, that little whiny voice again, that Kirby voice.
That was a Bill Raftery impersonation.
Yeah,
Bill,
I did.
Yeah. Raftery used to do that when, you know, the coaches would come over to him before and complain about something. He says, I must have missed all the thank you notes for the nice stuff I've said about you the last 25 years. You know.
And by the way, man, it's not a surprise at all that Georgia played like that, because they had so many people doubting them, like so many people that were talking about how, what they haven't done. And it's just, it's so nice being a coach and knowing, and you have that, because it's so hard to coach the other way. And they went so long, I think since 2020, not being a road favorite. And then all of a sudden now, oh, you got no shot. Like, you know, Kirby pouring gas all over that and got them all lathered up.
Let me ask you a question. I know it does. I'm not disputing that it does. Why does it work? Why does it work over and over and over again with players who all are smart? They have to know better. I know they kind of want it to work, maybe. Maybe that's part of it. Why does it work?
Because we're stupid. Like, I remember, Reese, some of the things that my coach said to me. Like now, like Brian Van Gorder, like we played Arkansas in 2002. And I'll never forget. He was like, Pollock, like I got to pick my side, like whatever side I wanted to rush the passer on. He was like, hey, man, just stay away from the right side. Sean Andrews is on that side. And I'm like, what? I'm pissed. You know me, Reese. Like,
I know.
We are so competitive, and we are so like, we don't get like the pats on the back, you know, you get accustomed to and you get used to. Yeah. But when you tell me I'm not good enough or I don't belong, or I mean,
that's, I guess what I'm saying though is, why in the world would Georgia believe that?
Because everybody was picking Texas. Everybody thought Texas was the better team. Everybody was patting Texas on the back, and just, so you had all this love coming one direction, and then everybody's like, what's wrong with Georgia? Why isn't Georgia doing this? Why don't they look like Georgia? And I think when you have that perfect storm, man, it's the reason I was like, Georgia's winning this game. Like, no doubt Georgia's winning this game.
I'd like the record to reflect I picked Georgia.
Was that one of those you went against everybody else, or was that?
I picked it before. I mean, it's documented and on tape. And that was, I picked Georgia to win the game. Now, some of the reason was just what you're saying. It was because everybody was saying Texas, and that was part of it. But, you know, and also part of it was what I just said. They're the team that I don't think they're invincible. I don't even think they're as good as they were last year. But they're also the team I'm not eager to bet against, you know? So.
Well, and that's why we have you on. Because, obviously, the smartest, the best looking, the best at teeing people up in the business. I mean, by far,
only remember the ones I got right. Don't ask me about any of the ones I've gotten wrong. I don't want to know that.
No, but dude, it's I turn it on every weekend, man, to watch you. I mean, I just
appreciate you, man.
I've always appreciated your friendship. You're the biggest professional I know, man. Always got the I's dotted, the T's crossed, and we'll get you on again. But appreciate you coming on and supporting your boy. And I promise you, I will get you a jersey to put behind you so we can take one of those down. I guarantee it. I promise.
Who should? Well, okay, my son's high school jersey is not coming down. So who's coming down, Mayday or Billis?
I think we can get Billis down. Then basketball season, we can put him back up. That seems fair.
All right. Yeah.
Maybe we can do that?
Yeah, that's fair. I like that.
All right, deal. Appreciate you supporting the Banquet of Blessings like always. Reese, you are the man. Thanks, brother.
Likewise, brother. Always great to see you, man.
See you, Bob. All right, well, I think that's our first live show in the book, which was interesting. Being a host is not as easy as Reese Davis makes it look. I think we got a good game, a good week of college football coming up, man. I think everybody will be paying attention to Clemson. I want to see if they can they show me there for real. Can they step up? Penn State, huge moment, man. Big time moment. You've struggled against Ohio State, 1-8, 1-9, whatever James Franklin is. This is a chance. This is an opportunity. A&M, can you back up what you did from a week ago against LSU? What is that quarterback situation going into a tough atmosphere at South Carolina? Saturday night, we will be right here. We will be live covering all the games. Thank you for everybody that watches, that hits like, that hits subscribe. We really appreciate it. And all ball, more ball coming your way.